All right, welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Matt Taibbi.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And
I just did that because it looked like you were looking from side to side.
Yeah, I do that a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, I kind of have my eyes going all over the place. I'm thinking in different directions.
You gotta be. You're a reporter. You're on the case. You're on the trail.
I don't think there's really a reason for it. I think it's just a nervous tick.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Like I'm actually making an effort to look straight ahead right now.
Right.
Eye contact.
That's good.
What happened this week? Anything?
Oh, so much. What happened this week? A lot. We'll get to a lot of it later, I think.
We're going to get to everything except the Simone Biles story.
Okay, I'm going to be real. I have no idea what's happening with that.
Yeah.
She stepped down, she quit, but she's really brave. I don't really understand.
It was so hard to figure out exactly what was going on. She stepped down, and then, you know, there was this whole immediate reaction afterwards that this was better than that if she'd actually won, and that she should be applauded more for that. And then there were people who were furious about that. It's like the Jimmy Jank thing.
Right.
But over the Olympics, which, does anybody watch, by the way?
I don't know. I haven't watched any of it. I was too busy watching Bodhi swim.
Right. Yeah. That's your real sport.
That's a real water. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we're takeless on that.
Takeless, yeah. I mean, is there mental health issues? Is that why she's being lauded as really brave?
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. So she's open about that.
I think the question is, are we glad that she's being open about that? Or is that, but does that have to be better than winning the gold medal?
Right. She won the mental health honesty gold medal.
Right. Yes, exactly. There we go. So, okay, what happened in the world this week?
Oh, so much. Let's see. I'm a little out of it. I'm not going to lie.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, I feel out of it. I don't mean I'm out of the loop. I'm that too. But I'm just in a weird mood.
Okay. Well, stuff happened, obviously. So we'll get to it. Should we just do the 4-foot groups?
Yeah, let's just jump into it. Yeah.
All right.
And then we'll have some interesting updates.
Yes,
mostly downers, but.
Right. But that's what life mostly is.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. That's what life is. Did you say life mostly is? Is that what you said?
That's what life mostly is.
Yeah.
A series of downers.
It is.
Life mostly is a series of downers.
A series of downers.
Right.
I saw a really cute dog on the street today. We could cut that in.
Did you run it over?
No. Oh, you're thinking a downer? No. She just jumped on me. She was so cute. Her name is Elsie.
Oh.
Maybe we should start putting cute animal clips in there.
We would do such a much more booming business if we
Oh my God,
that.
People would click on it like crazy. There's a really cute video of a koala, by the way, who's being weighed by a doctor, and she has a stuffed animal. And So the doctor's trying to weigh her. And when he takes the stuffed animal away, she crawls away from the scale. So finally he just says, okay, she's 2 point whatever pounds with the stuffed animal.
Oh,
and then
wow.
He takes the stuffed animal. He's going to weigh the stuffed animal so that they can subtract it. Yeah.
That's cute.
Really cute. It's really
is that
cute.
Is that a TikTok video?
I think I saw it on Instagram.
Hmm. I had a bad parenting moment.
Uh-oh.
Where one of my kids was asking what a Komodo dragon was. And I sort of remembered excitedly that I had seen a nature video involving a Komodo dragon. And I called it up on YouTube, but it's this horrifying video of a bunch of Komodo dragons just eating this deer. And the whole thing, it's screaming in agony the whole time. And they're biting it by the face. And
oh my God.
Yeah. And I'm like, my God, I'm a terrible parent. I had to tell them that it was actually something else. And
what did you tell them? It was
make-believe? I just pointed somewhere in some other direction and made up an excuse to have them look elsewhere. Do you want to watch Komodo dragons eating them?
No.
Deer?
No.
No? Okay.
Oh, we had their deer where my parents are. They're a bunch of deer.
Uh-huh.
And Bodhi's barking at them a lot. I think they're cute little baby deer, but they're dangerous, right? Because they could have Lyme disease and all other sorts of diseases.
Well, they have Lyme ticks, probably.
Ticks, right. Right. Yeah. I don't know if they have Lyme disease. Do they get it?
I'm not sure. Actually.
But they have the ticks. They have the carriers.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
They can be dicks.
Yeah, I think they kill people.
Yeah, if they jump in front of your car.
Yeah, by getting, yeah.
They'll go through your windshield, and then, you know, as they're in their death throes, they're kicking you and stuff like that. Yeah.
Total dick behavior. Actually, yeah, really, like a really selfish person. Right. Yeah, who makes, like, their problems your problems. Right. And they're the victim.
It's like, you know, if you're gonna commit suicide, you know, don't do it, but don't lie in front of a railroad track, because then you're gonna
traumatize all the people.
Yeah, and make them late. Driver.
Yeah.
Just go walk your dear self into a pond and
oh my God. Don't do any of that. Don't do either of that, those things.
Well, you
live,
a
guys.
Percentage of you probably would want to do that, because the alternative is getting shot to reduce your population.
Oh yeah, if you're talking for all the deer listening out there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, right, we were talking about deer. Sorry, I forgot that. Right.
No, not people.
I know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. We were just doing a comparison, the equivalent,
This conversation is really, I'm sorry, I took it in a strange direction.
No.
All right, so what happened in Democrat Suck this week?
So for Democrat Suck, I wanted to just like, so there's a serious Democrat Suck, and then there's like a not, it's not that it's not serious, but one of them is longer than the other. Let's start with the more substantive one, which is this we could also file under like nothing would fundamentally change, that famous Biden quote. Mm-hmm. But in fact, I was thinking we could do a quiz where I find a quote and you have to guess if it was Trump or Biden. So, okay, here, this is reading a Democracy Now. The Biden administration has announced plans to place some migrant families arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border in expedited removal proceedings. The practice allows U.S. immigration officials to deport people without a court hearing in front of an immigration judge. Advocates warn the policy is a violation of due process and international law. Now, I thought that the Dems were good on this stuff, right? I thought that this was one of the things that I know this isn't separating minors from their family, but wasn't Biden supposed to be putting like rule of law and humanitarian concerns in there, the ones that like Donald Trump didn't have?
So wait, what are they doing now?
They're announcing plans to place some migrant families arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border in expedited removal proceedings. So basically they're having these expedited removal proceedings, and it allows U.S. immigration officials to deport people without a court hearing in front of an immigration judge. And advocates warn the policy is a violation of due process and international law. So they're expediting it, and they're doing it in a way that may not comply with international law and may violate due process.
Right. So the Trump policy was let's bring them in, but let's make it so unpleasant and scary for kids that it'll be a deterrent to people coming in. And that was that policy, which we, I think, rightfully thought was sort of inhuman. Right? But this is just, let's just not bother with the deterrent and just
ship them out quickly.
Ship them out quickly.
Yeah. In a way that maybe violates due process and international law.
Right. So I'm assuming this has to do with people asking for asylum and that sort of thing.
Okay, so the Biden administration on Monday said it will seek to rapidly deport migrant families traveling with children who cross the southern border without legal permission. Migrant families who are not expelled to Mexico under current pandemic-related restrictions will be placed in, quote, expedited removal, end quote, proceedings, which allow border authorities to carry out deportations without court hearings, the Department of Homeland Security announced. Through expedited removal, U.S. border officials can circumvent the backlog-ridden immigration courts and summarily deport migrants to their home countries without affording them the same safeguards available during proceedings before an immigration judge. If migrants placed in the fast-tracked proceedings express fear of being harmed in their native countries, they are supposed to be interviewed by U.S. asylum officers. If they pass those interviews, migrants are allowed to present a full case for asylum in immigration court.
So we're just going to blow that off.
Which thing? The whole...
The whole, like, presenting your case for, you know, being harmed in your home country.
Yeah. I guess you... Oh, right.
We're just going to do this now. Whatever.
I think they're saying if migrants placed in the fast-track proceedings express fear of being harmed. So there's, like, a little pause, I guess.
Oh, I see.
And then they say the expedited deportations created by a Clinton-era law have been used by Republicans and Democratic administrations as a way to deter unauthorized border crossings. attempting to cross into the United States between ports of entry or circumventing inspection at ports of entry is the wrong way to come to the United States, DHS said in an announcement. These acts are dangerous and can carry long-term immigration consequences for individuals who attempt to do so. Historically, expedited removal has been criticized by civil society and advocates who argue the practice bars asylum seekers from consulting with lawyers in the U.S. and leads to the swift return of people who could face danger in their home countries. So the ACLU is weighing in on this.
What are they saying?
The expedited, so quoting Lee Gerlant, an attorney with the ACLU, told CBS News, the expedited removal system routinely leads to errors, and it is not a system that should not be used when people's lives are at stake. I think there's a typo there. I think they're saying, and it is a system that should not be used, or should not be used, when people's lives are at stake. We are extremely disappointed that the Biden administration is considering placing vulnerable asylum-seeking families in a system that lacks basic due process protections. What if, like, this is what happened? What if the ACLU's typo is responsible? Because it is not a system that should not be used.
Sounds like a double negative to me.
Yeah. Isn't that what happened with John Podesta when he asked, like, this cybersecurity people?
Can we speak entirely and can we not speak entirely, not, can we not speak entirely in double negatives for the rest of the show?
No, of course we cannot.
Okay.
Right? That worked, right? That doesn't not work, correct?
No, that doesn't not work.
Yeah. But it reminds me of, wasn't it Podesta who emailed his cybersecurity people and they were like, he was like, should I click on this? And they were like, definitely do click on that.
Did they say that?
Yeah. Instead of do not. ACLU, you got to clean up your act.
Right.
Or CBS,
yeah.
whoever.
It's that one word that you're missing that can be crucial sometimes. You know?
Yeah. Or that one word that you put in twice.
Right. Definitely do not click on that.
Right. Definitely do not click on that is how we would say it in our language and culture, Matt, our double negative culture.
Would not Russiagate not have happened if Podesta had not double clicked on?
Would not Russiagate not have happened? I can't say that it couldn't have happened. I can't not say that it didn't happen.
Right.
But this just goes back to like how it's fine. I mean, where's the outrage? I mean, there's some outrage. We got the ACLU. That's good. Although they got to be careful with those double negatives. The difference, there's a big difference between Trump and Biden. There are big differences in some cases, but it's not big enough. And the causes should remain at the forefront.
This is why, there's two things here. This is why I never get all that worked up about immigration issues, because almost both of the parties end up regressing basically right to the same place. I mean, I think the rhetoric is definitely more intense on the Republican side, but if you look at what actually happens, they end up in the same place. But yeah, this is why one of the reasons why Republican or Trump voters, you know, are basically going to be impossible to talk to going forward. It's because of stuff like this. You know, if you spend months talking about, oh my God, Trump's putting people in concentration camps, and you know, this is the worst thing since Auschwitz or whatever it is.
Right.
And then a few, you know, years later, it's first migrant children facility opens under Biden. I'm like, that's the headline in the Washington Post. And everybody's, you know, trying to downplay not the same policy, because again, the Trump policy was worse and it was basically sadistic, right? Like they were intentionally trying to do something that was nasty, but this isn't a whole lot better.
It's like a kinder, gentler concentration camp, like a smaller concentration camp.
It's just sort of openly fuck you, and we don't want you in the country, and you know, we won't even have the pretense of
giving you a hearing. So that's Democrats suck. And then this is just another one. This is a really quick one. If we could just play this video of Biden.
Beg your pardon?
Will you require all federal employees to get vaccinated?
That's under consideration.
Oh, now, God.
If you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were.
So that they ask, are you considering requiring all federal employees to be vaccinated? And he goes, it's under consideration. If you're not vaccinated, you're not nearly as smart as I thought you were.
Right. Yep.
Which is just such a dumb thing to say. because guess what? I don't think that's going to work. I don't think people are like not going to get vaccinated and then like, oh, but Biden won't think I'm smart.
Well, you know,
so I'm going to get vaccinated.
Yeah. I mean, I just wrote about this whole rollout of this PR campaign, the pandemic of the unvaccinated. We have to start blaming people. We have to start kind of using more stick and less carrot. This idea of, you know, if you're not vaccinated, you're not smart, or you're killing people, blah, blah, blah. Well, first of all, again, they clearly didn't do this with other demographics who had vaccine hesitancy, even pretty recently, right? I mean, they had issues with a whole series of different communities, you know, for different reasons, right? So you had people who were concerned about the history of the Tuskegee, right? So in Alabama, the numbers were not great, right? And, you know, then there was a separate issue with some Hispanic communities, right? And then but you would never go into any of these demographics and say, like, you're an idiot.
Right.
Like shaming is not going to work.
Right.
Right.
That's a big thing. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work.
I mean, I understand people feeling frustrated about it, but like, what are you trying to accomplish there?
I mean, it's like when he told people not to vote for him, like how many people did he tell not to vote for him?
Right. Or if you're not black, if you don't vote for me,
right.
Or
if you're not voting for me, you ain't black. Remember he told that to Charlemagne the God. So he's so ridiculous. He's just so entitled, and
he's had a lot more of those senior moments lately too.
Yeah,
he went off on another reporter again last week. Did you see that?
No, what did he do? What did he say to them?
Mr. President, Veterans Affairs.
Hang on a second. I think things are going well. Our role in Iraq will be as a dealing with not. It's just to be available, to continue to train, to assist, to help, and to deal with ISIS as it arrives. But we are not going to be, by the end of the year, in a combat mission.
Mr. President, Veterans Affairs is going to have a mandate.
You are such a pain in the neck, but I'm going to answer your question because we've known each other for so long. It has nothing to do with Iraq.
He's had a couple of these. You know, there was the one where he blew up at people for asking him questions about the Afghanistan drawdown. Then there was the other one about after the Putin summit. Not that I don't, you know, 100% get losing your patience with the press, but
right.
I hate to go there, but what would the headlines have been if this were a year ago, you know?
Right. Although he would have, I mean, that would have been so tame for Trump.
That's true. But what were some of Trump's worst interactions with reporters?
Well, there was Jorge Ramos.
Oh, that guy.
We told to leave.
Yeah. Thrown out of the club.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
That was really
terrible. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Yeah. That's fucked up.
Who else was there? I mean, wasn't he always insulting people? There was a really painful, one where there was this like totally pathetic, like, there was this guy in the audience who was Jewish who was like setting Trump up to just like show off how. Was he setting it? He basically was asking about like anti-Semitic crimes, and he was very uncritical. In fact, I think it was almost like a setup question to give him like the opportunity to say how good he was with Jew stuff. And he just berated him. And the guy like apologized afterwards. It was one of the worst things. It was one of the most like cringe. I hate using that word, but it was very cringe.
It was, yeah, that was pretty cringe.
Do you remember that?
I don't. We have to look that up.
You probably, it was a repressed memory.
Yeah. Well, I have, I mean, it's
oh, right.
hard for
or
me
Matt
to separate.
Yeah. Aging,
just lost memory. I can't figure out which is which. The Serge Kovalevsky thing was also pretty cringe. That wasn't a direct confrontation with a reporter. That was
which one was that?
You know, that was the, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That one was pretty bad.
Written by a nice reporter. Now the poor guy, you got to see this guy. Oh, I don't know what I said. I don't remember. He's going like, I don't remember. Maybe that's what I said. This is 14 years ago. They didn't do a retraction.
Oh my God, so bad.
The people we have to be president of this country are just, it's just amazing.
I know, the dregs.
Obama was sort of a respite, right? Like he was
pleasant.
Well, he was sort of in the ballpark of human most of the time.
Right.
You know, for the most of the rest of the century, it's been either can't speak English, right? Like Bush. Although Bush was charming.
Yeah, in a folksy, disgusting way, yeah.
Right. I mean, those videos, when you watch them, you laugh, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to go assault somebody while you're watching that.
Right. Who makes you want to assault? Which presidents inspire that? It's a good thing you didn't get the 23andMe test after all.
I get that with Trump and Biden.
It's kind of like women who, you know, women have their cycles and they're predictable usually. I mean, maybe not. Some women have cycles that aren't predictable, but men, I'm generalizing here, like men also have their own hormonal stuff and moodiness going on, but like they don't, you guys don't even have a schedule.
Well, what am I gonna some of that's strategic though.
What do you mean?
Well, I think sometimes you want to be unpredictably hostile so that keeps people on their toes.
Yeah, so you can weaponize it.
Right.
Right. But I feel like Trump is like a regular cycle. And Trump is like the woman because you know what he's going to do, what he's going to say. Like his outbursts, his attacks are predictable. Except for that Jewish reporter. That was just weird. But Biden, you never know.
Right. I like it when he talks about people's like failing ratings and how they work for the newspaper that's going out of business or whatever
Trump,
it is. Yeah. Those are funny.
Yeah.
But when he's actually like rattled and trying to be insulting for no reason, that shit was pretty crazy.
But it was always his lane, right? I guess the Ramos thing was like really, really stood out.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, that was really bad.
Yeah.
That was when I thought this was the Trump thing was going to turn into something entirely different.
Like what?
I thought there was a possibility of sort of a legitimate sort of black shirt kind of a movement, you know, because early on in his speeches, they were like making a show of tossing people out of the events. And, you know, remember he was telling people to like bounce their heads off the cars and that sort of thing. They had these, and then the Ramos thing happened. And I thought that was going to be like an escalation.
Right.
But it,
no, it's pretty tame for Trump.
Yeah. No, after that, he was just mainly just behaviorally unstable.
Right.
We have to do like a Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, we really do.
Greatest hits of Trump.
Yeah, we do.
Do you think we're going to miss that someday?
I already do.
You do?
He was funny. I already do.
I miss Bush. I guess it was all the stuff around Trump that was so exhausting.
Right.
But okay. So that happened. Where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 with how in control of himself Biden is?
I don't know. That he looked pretty like discombobulated and unaware in that last clip.
I mean, he's got that like I was just hit with an oar kind of look.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he gets that a lot, but it's more and more often, it feels like to me. But that's not a Democrats suck. That's just a Democrats getting old thing.
Right. It's not. Yeah. You certainly can't make. I can make fun of that more.
Yeah. You can cast aspersions. I can't.
Right.
What were we talking about again?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was a Democrats suck. Republicans suck. There was a lot to choose from this week. I guess there's this article in Politico. America is not racist becomes a GOP 2024 mantra. Lightning rod issues such as critical race theory and, quote, defund the police are a staple for Republican contenders. And there's a picture of Mike Pence. He's doing that. I once caught a fish this big pose. That's my favorite political pose. You like that one?
Yeah, it's very,
So the lead reads, Democrats made structural racism a centerpiece of the 2020 presidential primary. Now the Republican rebuttal is emerging as an early plank of the 2024 GOP contest. America is not a racist country. The mantra used by nearly all of the Republican contenders is unavoidable in the earliest stages of the GOP's nominating campaign. At the annual Family Leadership Summit in Iowa this month, all three potential presidential prospects on stage, former Vice President Mike Pence, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, took turns joining in the refrain in one form or the other. Top Democrats, including President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, have said publicly they don't believe America is a racist country, but Republicans are hoping to portray the party as out of step with the thinking of mainstream America. And by attempting to harness lightning rod issues such as critical race theory and defund the police, the GOP is signaling race will again be at the center of the 2024 campaign. And so I guess why this sucks is that this is just bracing us for what we're going to spend 2024 hearing about. You know, this is this, the whole thing is now going to revolve around
the culture wars,
this race debate. I guess I had some mild expectation that the Republican Party might have some kind of epiphany about a different strategy to employ.
No, because both of the parties, like, both parties just use it to not do anything.
Right.
Right. Like, I keep thinking about the DNC when they kept talking about structural racism and how, you know, COVID affected Black people disproportionately. And then what were they doing about it?
Right.
Like, not Medicare for all, not even like an emergency.
Neither of these things is actually a productive conversation, right? So one side is going to say America is a structurally racist country, and then the Republicans are going to deny it. And like, where does that debate actually lead us in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is obviously its founding. And I do think that there's institutionalized racism, but the question is, what are we going to do about it?
And what's the extent of it too? Like, that's the other. Yeah, I don't know. Part of this is because I just read this article by David Frum. Mm. Did you see that?
No. What's it about?
Premise of it is vaccinated America has had enough. He has this passage, which I think was really kind of telling. It's like, does Biden's America have a breaking point? Biden's America produces 70% of the country's wealth and then sees that wealth transferred to support Trump's America, which is fine. That's what citizens of one nation do for one another. But the reciprocal part of the bargain is not being upheld. Will blue America ever decide it's had enough of being put medically at risk by people and places whose bills it pays? Check yourself. Have you? And we talked about this with Sirota when he was on,
right?
Which is like this sort of transformation of the electorates. It's once upon a time, the wealthiest districts in the country, they voted Republican. Like if you had a predominantly white, wealthy neighborhood where the median income was over $250,000, it was almost guaranteed to vote Republican up until pretty recently, up until the 2016 election. Now we've seen this sort of radical shift where most of Trump's voters, he won like 2,500 counties to 509 for Biden, except there are more people in the Democratic counties and they're wealthier in those counties. So the Republicans, if they were smart, they would lean into the fact that, you know, we're kind of the underclass, you know, now, which they can argue. We come from the poorer states, right? But they don't want to do that. They'd rather argue about race and, you know, say we're not racist, right? Which is going to be a rallying cry. It just seems like a non-issue.
But also because their policies don't help the non-wealthy, right? So they can't lean into it too much.
Well, right. But they could come up with something that would sound that like that. You know what I'm saying? Trump did.
Right. Yeah. They could be better. Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they could sell it better.
And Trump talked about how I alone will fix it. I'm going to bring the jobs back to this Ford plant. I'm going to give you universal health care, all that stuff. Remember that?
Right. That song just popped into my head by Live. Is that the band? I Alone. Love You, I Alone. Something, yeah.
I don't know. I guess I just picked that out because I'm already dreading.
How that conversation's going to go.
The 2024 presidential election is going to be. All right. So what happened in, isn't that weird? You have a good one.
Yeah. For isn't that weird? This is interesting. Brian Stelter himself tweeted out, coming to you today from a one of a kind TV studio in an old carriage house in Providence, Rhode Island. And now that in itself isn't that weird. So what's weird about this is that he's sitting down without pants on. He's wearing a jacket. And so you see him in the TV screen, right? It's like a behind the scenes photo. And you see him in the TV screen appearing normal because it's like above the, you know, it's from the waist up. But then in the photo, he's just sitting there.
Pantsless.
You can't tell if there's underwear or not.
Yeah, it's like that Austin Powers scene where he keeps having something in.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And there's like, what is, it's a podium. What is that thing in front of him?
It's strategically placed.
Yeah. His knees are bent.
That's a man taking a dump.
Oh, is that what?
Pose, yeah. Right.
Yeah, let's see. I'm zooming in on it. I screenshot it and then I'm zooming in on it. Okay, I see black shorts, I believe. Yeah, if you zoom in a little more, right, you can see that there's like, looks like black boxers or black shorts. You see a little bit of the white shirt coming down.
Yeah.
You see a little bit of sneakers. It looks like black sneakers if you scroll down.
Those could be boxers.
Yeah, I think, right, boxers or shorts. Why do you do this though? It's also a weird podium. It looks like it has like a carpet on it. It looks like it's... It
might be a box.
Oh yeah, a box? What's on the on that side? Is he going like through something?
He looks like he's screaming in delight while on the toilet.
Right. Like he knew that when he tweeted it out, he knew that he was not wearing pants and that would be visible. Do you think, imagine if he...
Bombs away.
Yeah, what if he... Do you think do you think it's even conceivable that he like forgot about that part being visible and tweeted it out? Then it was just too late? No. This was an intentional decision?
That's a really tough one because I'm struggling with what the intentional reason to release a photo like that would be.
Yeah.
Because you don't even want people having the tube in discussion.
What did Fox say?
Fox said, CNN's reliable sources with left-wing host Brian Stelter hit another weekly low on Sunday in the critical demographic that is coveted by advertisers, despite an attempt to promote the episode on Twitter with an image of the host in his signature shorts. So this must be a thing he does.
Oh, okay. So he usually does this. It just happens to look like he's taking a dump.
Yeah, Stelter's program attracted only 100,000 viewers in the key demo of adults aged 25 to 54 for its smallest audience of the year in the category. The dismal turnout was an 8% drop from the previous episode, which was previously the lowest rated edition of 2021. To put CNN's alarmingly low figure in perspective, there are 8 college football stadiums in America that hold more than 100,000 people, but Stelter couldn't draw a larger crowd than the 25 to 54 age demographic in a country with a population of over 333 million. Okay, Fox. Like, yeah. Get it.
What do you really think?
Yeah. You know, like anybody could get 100,000 people. Well, I guess that's true. It's not a great number.
Did it help them?
Stelter promoted the episode with a photo that showcased his trademark thigh-exposing shorts as he boasted about broadcasting from an old carriage house in Rhode Island. In March, Stelter filmed himself sporting similar shorts in an attempt to prove that hosting a TV show from home, quote, humanizes the news. So let's look at that other shorts photo.
On Sunday, however, Stelter, and this is back from 5 months ago, pulled back the curtain to show viewers what it looks like when he does TV hits from home in his underwear. Yes, you read that correctly.
I'm torn on this a little bit.
Here's his tweet. Let me show you. This is the original tweet. This is interesting. Maybe we should start doing this if it helps.
The footage shows our little media hall monitor, calves and thighs fully exposed while he appeared for a television report on CNN. Your move, Chris Cuomo. Sean Hannity. See what you can do with that.
Okay, now you've just traumatized me with Humpty Dumpty, and I'm going to have that image in my, you know, seared into my memory for the rest of my life. Did you have to ruin my life?
Sorry.
That is traumatic.
I meant to love.
Feigned, you know, liberal moral outrage. I got it. All right, Tucker, thank you. Welcome to Hannity.
Hannity has no comic timing whatsoever.
No, terrible. So that, okay, just to be clear, that was, that video of Tucker Carlson kind of cackling is from Brian Stelter himself, who tweeted out, poor Hannity, traumatized by the sight of me wearing shorts during a breaking news live shot from home. For the rest of you, check out my entire report about pandemic era TV news from home. Oh, so this is pretty meta. So, like, did he do a thing?
I think this is a setup with all of them. It's like a G. Gordon Liddy, Timothy Leary thing. Like, they're hyping each other.
Yeah.
Although, why would those guys who have huge numbers help Stelter?
Unless because they gave them their own time to shine?
I think he's got to go a little further. I think he's got to go assless pants next.
Assless chaps.
Yeah.
So... Stelter insisted that embarrassing moments are humanizing moments as he highlighted a viral clip from last April of ABC News correspondent Will Reeve appearing on Good Morning America without pants. According to Stelter, Reeve was perhaps too revealing.
If it is successful, guys.
Very cool. We love it, Will.
He wore pants. But hey, I can relate. This was me live on CNN with just 2 minutes notice talking with Wolf Blitzer about Trump's Twitter account being banned.
So there was a guy on Good Morning America who I guess got some shit because he was not wearing pants. Right. Which you could barely see because he had his suit jacket on.
Right.
And so Brian Stelter then thought it would be a good idea to turn that into a kind of piece about
it's like a humanized media thing.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a net minus overall. I don't think this really works. Who knows?
I mean, do other people do? I mean, a lot of people, I think, have been doing this, right, during the pandemic.
Going pantsless?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, anchors have been doing that forever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember seeing that as a little boy, believe it or not, in news studios. Yeah.
But were they wearing shorts?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, shorts or
boxers, kilts.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They would throw on the suit jacket at the last minute.
Is that when you would like go to your dad's job?
Yeah. I mean, that's an old anchorman thing.
So what would they wear on the bottom though? Like,
you know, you would come in flip-flops and shorts from, you know, during the summer, and you would just throw on your anchorman jacket and go sit in the set. This is that's an age old thing. That's one they can ask.
Okay. Yeah.
Does Brian Stelter's tweet showing his thighs while broadcasting make him seem more accessible, humanized to you? KT Helps and I debating. Choice one, yes. Choice two, no. Choice three, other. Choice four, other, majorly.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
So far, it looks like here's how it's going to break down. Yes, right now is at 6.8%. No is at 62.1%. Other is 5.8%. Other, majorly, is at 25.2%. Actually, there's a surprising 9.6% for yes.
We should make another poll. Be like, if you voted yes, is it because you dislike Taibbi?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's back down to 8.3%. Should we comment on the numbers, by the way?
Because what numbers?
His declining numbers. Now, like, it's not about him.
Right.
But have you looked at the numbers for cable lately?
Mm-mm. How are they?
So cable news numbers always decrease significantly after an election year.
Right.
But they are catastrophically down. It feels like there's the reversion to norm now that Trump's gone.
Yeah.
Do you think that's the case? Or do you think that it's because of alternative media?
Oh, you know what it is? It's probably because of Useful Idiots.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's the Useful Idiots anti-bump.
Well, I mean, this is really your lane, Matt. I feel like you need to explain this to me. You need to hate and explain it.
No, I'm curious what you think about this, because there's a bunch of different ways to look at that phenomenon. One is that it's just normal, and it may even be like a good thing that people are being less news obsessed in the post-Trump era. The other possibility is that there's been like reputational damage to those brands during the Trump years, and they're having a hard time coming back. Like they did really well during the election period, then during the whole drama leading up to January 6th, CNN had an amazing day on January 6th. I think it broke its all-time record. Rachel had a great first quarter because of the month of January.
Mm-hmm.
But then everybody's just been kind of like on a steep downward slope since then. So like, what does that mean?
It means they need another Russiagate or another January 6th. What else could it be? You see, if we had tweeted the thing about Biden being a corpse, that probably could have gotten us.
Right.
That could have become a national thing that MSNBC started talking about a lot. Why don't we plant the next story or predict the next story? I guess we don't know because we can't read the future, but what would be a good one?
Maybe they can indict Trump for something and he could have a trial. That would be good. That would be excellent TV.
Must see TV. So we have some updates, story.
I have to do, isn't that terrible first?
Oh, sorry.
Climate emergency scientists say Earth's vital signs continue to dip despite pandemic. Air travel and carbon dioxide emissions went down for a bit, but the world continues to burn amid a global climate emergency. Nearly 18 months after the COVID-19 pandemic began to take hold and slow the pace of life worldwide, scientists are reiterating a dire warning that the climate crisis is still very much with us. In November 19, 2019, the journal Bioscience published an article co-signed by over 11,000 scientists that declared a global climate emergency. Upshot of the rest of this is human activity slowed during the pandemic, but hasn't done much to change the basically catastrophic outlook.
So people were hoping that there'd be like a silver lining to this?
Yeah, like people are going outside less and maybe, you know, driving
right.
muscle cars or, you know, I don't know. What is it that people do that causes climate change? They're using energy, which is something you do even at home. So I'm not really clear what, I guess driving.
I actually thought people just dying meant that people would use less stuff. But I guess
they didn't die at huge enough rates to really affect anything.
So it's just staying home. So it's just staying home and not driving.
Right. So this is just bad news on top of bad news.
So, we were deprived of potential silver lining.
Which qualifies, that's kind of right in the sweet spot of this segment.
Yeah, very terrible.
In case you were tempted to feel good, here's some reasons not to feel good.
Terrible on top of terrible.
Right. So that happened. Any other quick updates we got to do for this?
Oh, yeah. We have a bunch of updates. So let's see. What do we got for updates? Stephen Donziger was found guilty, incredibly enough. Friend of show, Steve Donziger, he's been on the show before. He now faces 6 months in jail following a decades-long battle against the oil company. He did predict, I don't remember if it was on this show or if it was on the Katie Halper show, but I think it was on this show on Useful Idiots that he predicted he would be convicted.
Yes.
Did you predict that? Did you think that would happen?
I was not familiar enough with the case to really know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, but it's not surprising given the entire arc of the case.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, okay, there's that. So our thoughts go out to him and his family. I wonder if there's anything that can be done. Can't they be humiliated?
No,
they can't be. That's awful.
That's not good. There was some news with Julian Assange.
Yeah, Assange got his Ecuadorian citizenship stripped. Also not good. Ecuador has revoked the citizenship of Assange. Ecuador's justice system formally notified the Australian of the nullity of his naturalization in a letter that came in response to a claim filed by the South American country's foreign ministry. A naturalization is reconsidered when it is granted based on the concealment of relevant facts, false documents, or fraud. Ecuadorian authorities said Assange's naturalization letter had multiple inconsistencies, different signatures, the possible alteration of documents, and unpaid fees, among other issues. Carlos Poveda, Assange's lawyer, said the decision was made without due process and Assange was not allowed to appear in the case.
Translation, the United States leaned on Ecuador and this happened.
Yeah, that's awful.
So, yeah.
That's awful.
So is he stateless or is he back to being an Australian citizen or that's it?
I don't know.
We should ask Gabriel or somebody.
Yeah, we should, yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell? That's interesting. Two bad Ecuador cases. Because Chevron, of course, was...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely bad news. We got to end this on a lighter note. This is
I know.
This is a bummer.
So really excited to be talking to Jennifer R. Farmer, who is an author and a campaign surrogate for Nina Turner. She's also a social justice publicist. And of course, Nina Turner, full disclosure, big friend of the show, repeat offender, repeat guest. And of course, Nina Turner was a co-chair of the Bernie Sanders for President campaign, and she's currently running for Congress for Ohio's 11th congressional district. And she was a state senator before. There have been a couple of articles that have come out, including one in Newsweek and one at The Intercept. And there's an ethics probe that basically was launched because of an article at The Intercept from a few months ago. But this other piece at The Intercept, in the race against Nina Turner, GOP donors fund Chantel Brown. With 1 week left in the Ohio primary, Republican donors have picked their Democrat and the pro-Israel PAC supporting her. And so it goes through some of the people who support her. And there's Democratic Majority for Israel, which is a PAC, and they spent $1.2 million on ads supporting Brown and opposing Turner, and also has a slew of donors who have made ample donations to Republican candidates and causes, Leonard Feinstein, who donated $25,000 to DMFI, has made large contributions to the National Republican Senatorial Committee. The Republican Party of Cuyahoga County, Steve Fishman, who donated $20,000 to DMFI, also has donated to a bunch of Republicans, including Lindsey Graham. David Heller, a Cleveland area real estate executive, donated $10,000 to DMFI and was a supporter of the Republicans. So they just go through some of the...
I think the Intercept article was framed a little bit oddly, because there's really two things going on here with this race. One is that this is a continuation of the kind of Sanders v. Biden, Sanders v. Clinton, progressive versus neoliberal divide within the party. But the other is that this is a direct kind of referendum on the Israel issue, because Brown is an open supporter. She's one of these people who says we have to stand behind our closest ally in Israel. Turner has said the exact opposite. Solidarity is a verb. You know, Palestinian lives matter, all that stuff. So there's going to be a lot of money that's sort of pro-Israel that's going to Brown. You know, yes, you can probably characterize it as people who've also donated to Republicans, but I think they've also donated to basically anybody who supports Israel. This is more about Israel than about left versus right, it feels like to me.
Right. Although that I would say isn't the Israel issue turns into that, like it becomes that, but yeah, it's more left versus, it's more one except of those.
Left versus right. Okay. Well then blue versus red, because you know what I'm saying? Cause the Democrats have, you know, shown a similar fealty to Israel over the years. That's a nice Bernie book you have behind you.
Thanks.
Who is that?
Oh, Bernie Sanders.
Oh, Bernie wrote that one.
Bernie wrote it. I also have Listen Liberal. Nice. I also have a Matt Taibbi book.
Nice. Nice.
I Can't Breathe.
Right. Yep.
Do you like my you see my little Bernie doll?
Yeah, he's going to fall down. You need to be careful.
Okay, yeah.
He's a sturdy guy.
Yeah, so this is a fascinating race, because it's going to end up, this, which is happening on August 3rd, there's this sort of runoff vote in the primary, and it's going to be basically uncontested from there. So whoever wins is going to end up getting the seat, but it's going to be a referendum on a couple of things. It's on this on the strength of the National Democratic Party, which clearly does not want Turner to win, and then also on the sort of Israel lobby versus the pro-Palestine movement. Right. I think both of those things are in play here. And it'll be really interesting to see. And there's been a lot of national press about this. You can clearly see where a lot of it's going. Like they're trying to suggest that the race is getting closer. You know, there's sort of an over-examination of Turner's past and how many detractors she has within the party, which is something you can say about almost any candidate. Yeah, it feels like there's a last minute publicity draft going on with this. So it'll be interesting to hear what Jennifer has to say about all that.
Yeah. So let's talk to Jennifer. Welcome to Useful Idiots. We're so excited to be talking to you. Just wanted to ask you, I guess, to start, how you know Nina Turner.
Sure. So thank you for having me. I first met Nina Turner, I want to say in 2009, and she was a state senator at that time. I was the deputy chief of staff for the Senate Democrats with the Ohio Senate. And so we've known each other all these years. I worked very closely with her when she was in office and in various capacities that she and I have both held since that time.
And that's when she did that great bill asking for men to get permission, right? Like written permission from their former partners before they could get Viagra.
Yeah, I mean, but she had a number of, she had a number of phenomenal bills. But what I recall most is she would stand up on the Senate floor and she would whip her colleagues, you know, by telling the truth and painting what was happening in stark and vivid terms, not just for the people who were in the room, but for Ohioans who depended on the legislature to do the right thing. So she's always had the ability to work across the aisle, and just really, really convincing and really, really taking the moral high ground.
And can you tell us what's happening right now with the campaign?
So we're in the final stretch of the campaign, and this is a battle of ideas. You know, she has, since she got into this race, she's talked about the conditions facing folks in Cleveland, Ohio, and the Akron area, which comprises the district, poverty. There are more people leaving Cleveland than any other large city in the country. She's talked about those. And what we're seeing is an onslaught of attack, some of it funded by Republicans, and most of it not focused on substance, but focused on a fear of what she could do. What we really want is a debate on the issues. We want to talk about the issues impacting people in Northeast Ohio. And that's what Senator Turner has been pushing and trying to do.
When you say funded by Republicans, which you're talking about some of this PAC money that's come in, a lot of it's sort of pro-Israeli type money, but can you be specific about who you're talking about?
Sure. So I'm talking about, DMFI, but I'm talking about the people who are giving to DFMI to support her opponent. I'm speaking specifically of Robert Kraft, who individually, and as many people know, he's the owner of the New England Patriots. But I'm speaking specifically about Kraft, who donated $5,800 individually and through family and friends, another $20,000. I'm speaking of the former Cuyahoga County Republican chair. So just a number of Republicans who are weighing in and giving money to Chantel Brown, Nina Turner's opponent.
Can you talk about the recent pieces that there's an investigation? I know that at Newsweek and Daily Poster that they did together, those revelations about, I guess, Kraft and other people who are funding it?
Sure.
Chantel Brown's campaign?
Sure. So in April, The Intercept reported that Chantel Brown, who's a Cuyahoga County council member, had voted to award millions worth of contracts to companies that were connected to her romantic partner. Now, as someone who's worked in Ohio state politics, albeit on the administrative side, I know that elected officials are required to file disclosure forms. And I know that elected officials are held to a high standard in terms of what they can and cannot do. So voting to award millions to a company connected to your partner, your romantic partner, I mean, it's certainly concerning. So, you know, as you noted, The Intercept reported on this earlier this year in April. Apparently, the Ohio Auditor's Office got wind of it and sent it over to the Ohio Ethics Commission, and they are reviewing. And so we're looking at possible criminal charges if they decide to go that route.
And what are the polls show right now? I mean, I've seen headlines that said the race is tightening. Is that true? Is that not true? What information do you have?
Chantel Brown's campaign released a series of polls, and that was a predictable gesture, right? Because we had a poll that showed that Senator Turner was leading by a wide margin, and then Chantel Brown's campaign came out and showed something else. What I will say is that polling, when it comes to the Black community, and there's a large segment of this district that is Black, it's not always reliable. I also find it questionable that in the last few days of the campaign, there's a poll that shows that Chantel is pulling ahead. This is a race that there's no question it's close, but there's also no question that support for Nina Turner, it is palpable. She walks into different establishments, people come up to her and they tell her they're voting for her. In fact, there was a council member who recently changed his support from Chantel Brown to Nina Turner. And one of the things that he cited was the negative attack ads and how it was really over the top. And that happened within the last 48 hours. So certainly as Nina Turner is moving around the district, as the people on her campaign are moving across the district and engaging with voters and, you know, doing this GOTV, there's a ton of support.
Do you see this as, I mean, there's clearly a lot of money pouring into this race from outside the area. It feels a lot like this has become a proxy battle for the larger schism between, you know, within the Democratic Party, between sort of the Bernie wing and the centrist Clintonian wing of the party. You know, what would a victory here mean in terms of that sort of ongoing dispute?
So for people who are in the district, Cleveland is among the poorest of large big cities. For people in the district, their concern is how are we going to pay our bills and also pay for our health insurance? How are we going to put food on the table and also ensure that our children have a future? They are looking and responding to the candidate who they believe can best do that. If Nina Turner wins this election, it means that the people have won. You know, the people have spoken very, very clearly about the direction that they want for their community. For a lot of people who are outside of Cleveland, they are focusing on everything else except for the people who are hurting inside the district. And those are the voices that that we should listen to. One thing that Nina Turner has said repeatedly is that she is going to be a champion for the people. She's going to take their needs to Congress. And certainly when it comes to the Voting Rights Act, when it comes to ending the filibuster, there are people all across the country who feel that they elect leaders, their leaders go to Washington and forget who they serve. And the people that they should be serving are the people who sent them there, the constituents from the district.
Can you talk more about the differences in their platforms or their positions?
Well, I can talk about Nina Turner's position because she's the only candidate in this race who's really been talking about the issues. The other candidate has run on a platform of basically, I am not Nina Turner. And for people who are trying to decide, are the material conditions impacting my life going to improve? That does not give them much. For Nina Turner, she's committed to Medicare for all. She's committed to ensuring that a health event does not derail a person's future. She's committed to ensuring that college is more affordable. She's committed to equal wages for equal work. She's committed to ensuring that when you think about the future that we're leaving behind for the generations that are coming, that it's one that ensures climate justice, right? So she's very, very concerned about what's happening in not just the Cleveland community, but Ohio and across the world, quite frankly. Those are the things that she's passionate about, and those are the things that voters are responding to. I saw some polling information recently, and it noted that Black men between the ages of 18 and 55 are overwhelmingly supportive of Nina Turner. Mm-hmm. She is the best surrogate for this demographic. And I think for Black men and for a lot of people in the district, they have not felt seen and they have not felt heard. And she's working very hard to change that, and it's working.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. That was a good interview. Interesting interview. Interesting story. We'll see what happens. I really like that clip from MSNBC.
It's classic.
It's so classic, right? The classic technocracy. We should have a word for that. Technocratic wisdom. You know, when you pretend something is, you're calling what, like calling balls and strikes, but you're actually ideologically motivated.
Right.
Like when you're pretending, you're just describing as opposed to endorsing.
Technocratic is the 21st century version of folksy. It's like an adjective that they give to, that's basically meaningless to somebody that kind of the status quo people want to win.
Right. I guess they'll call people technocrats and they're trying to suggest they're good managers and good administrators. But this is something, this is like the whole ethos of technocracy, right? Where like this, the people who are saying this stuff about Turner, it's the false expertise, information-based analysis. It's ideology pretending to be just the facts.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so this is going to be interesting to see what happens next week. We sort of started the show off a couple of years ago, and this was sort of the big issue, was this argument that was going on within the Democratic Party. Everybody's sort of acting like it's over, but it's right. It's not really, you know. I think it's still, obviously after South Carolina and Clyburn and the kind of, Super Tuesday massacre in 2020, it's, suffused a little bit, but this argument is still very much alive. And I think you can see with Turner's race, especially with the amount of money that she's raised, that there's still a lot of popular support for kind of the progressive side of this dispute.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we're going to see this issue of Medicare for All, which people pretend is something that's much less popular than it is, right, especially among Black voters.
Well, they're going to kill that however they can. You know, I mean, it'll take a lot more than
the squad
and a few more. It's going to take a generation for that to get to the point where they can actually vote on it. But, or maybe not. Maybe I'm being pessimistic.
Yeah.
But they want to kill that more than anything.
Nina, if Nina Turner wins, I think it's going to be pretty clear that Useful Idiots played a big part, having her on multiple times and then having Jennifer Farmer on. If she doesn't win, what's the opposite of knock on wood?
Knock on marshmallow?
Knock on marshmallow, yeah.
Knock on an unstable alloy?
Yeah, exactly. I thought you said unstable ally. Which is, there are a lot of unstable allies, but if she doesn't win, it's probably because she didn't come on this time,
right?
This round.
Yeah, exactly.
No. All right.
All right. That was great. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for checking in, and we will see you again on Monday morning.
Yeah, for our Monday morning. Those are going great. People really like it. Keep sending us. Yeah, they do. Keep sending us clips, guys. If you have any ideas of Sunday morning things that you want us to look at,
right?
Talk about, yeah.
So we'll do that, and then we'll see you again next week on the show. But in the meantime, you got to rate, review, subscribe,
yes,
all those things that you're supposed to do.
Usefulidiots.substack.com.
Because otherwise, it just doesn't work for us.
Yeah, we have to. Yeah, it's not workable. It's not working for me. It's not working for us. Don't you hate, right, when people are kind of like assholes, but they pretend that they're just being, interesting parallel with the technocracy thing.
Right. Yeah.
I hate when people
personal
use like.
Personal technocracy.
Yeah, personal technocracy. Yeah.
That's an interesting concept. We got to work on that.
Yeah, we got to work on that. There's definitely a thing when people are assholes and they use touchy-feely language. Like, when it just makes me feel like.
Yeah, that's usually because they don't want to say the bad thing.
Right. Like, right. I don't want to hear about your problems. So they'll be like, I feel like a garbage can when you talk to me.
I'm sorry, that's funny.
Yeah, a human.
I like that line, actually.
Yeah, I heard someone say that once about someone.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, thanks for checking in, and we will see you again soon.
Yeah. Hello, thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.